Hello, I'm Paddy O'Donnell, and this is The Crimologist from Farrow and Ball, the podcast where paint and colour meet life. My own life has always been filled with colour. I'm fascinated by it. And lucky me, I now work as a colour expert at Farrow and Ball, which means I spend my life exploring people's innermost dreams and using colour to bring those dreams to life.
The world is colourful. I always see life in colour.
My first memory when it comes to colour is red. I thought her dress was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen, and I wanted to live in red.
Every day I see the power that colour has, the way it can lift us or soothe us.
Do you know, I've got glasses that fit each colour room. So these are my pink ones in my pink room, and so I've got green ones over there, neutral in my bedroom. Not that you're going up there, Patrick.
Why not?
And that's why we've created this series, to explore how colour works in a room, but also how it works on our heads, our hearts, our identities.
There's loads of colours in that. The velvet dingles, and what we were talking about, the cracks and the crannies always go down to dark green or dark black, don't they?
I've never done my life story through colour, and everyone should do this.
My guest on The Crimologist today is Cassia Sinclair, historian, writer and author of The Secret Lives of Colour. I love it. I actually have a copy here with me. It's a wonderfully unusual dive into the histories of different colours. Cassia says she's always had a fascination with colour, its story and its origins. Cassia, it's so lovely to be here in your lovely home.
Well, having not painted my house, I feel, you know, living with the previous owner's paint colours on the walls, I was a bit embarrassed. I was like, oh no, maybe I should do all the painting before Farrow and Ball arrive, but I didn't get around to it, obviously. So you're seeing the pre-paint.
I'm holding back. I didn't want to say anything. Are you future planning? Have you done any schemes yet?
I've had so many thoughts about it. I've done quite a lot of Pinterest boards. And then, of course, I changed my mind quite soon afterwards. I'm very, unfortunately, very colour indecisive. People always think that because I think a lot about colour and I write a lot about colour, that I'd be really good at making decisions and decorating my own home. And sadly, that's just not the case because I spend quite a lot of time looking at colours. And so I fall in love with new colours quite frequently.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because obviously I help other people professionally to choose colours for their home. Mm. That's a really easy discipline for me. One, because there's a time constraint normally. But as you say, coming to choose with your knowledge, and yeah, hopefully for me, some kind of knowledge, it's really tricky, isn't it?
It's really tricky.
I procrastinate and kind of have swatches up and go, I can live with that for a little bit.
Mm. Yeah. Although I do feel like you might be fibbing to me and trying to make me feel better, because I'm sure I saw on Instagram a beautifully decorated house that you'd move into not that long ago, and I feel like that was beautiful.
Oh, my home where we live with my mother.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that looks very polished.
it's really not. We needed to create our own space within my mother's environment, so that was kind of a needs-must moment.
Mm. So have you sort of painted lines through various rooms halfway along?
Yeah, there's basically red and sort of that yellow and black tape where she's not allowed to cross and we're not allowed to cross.
Makes total sense.
It's perfect. It's a really happy sort of equilibrium.
Good use of colour.
So I have asked you to consider four colours that tell particular stories at various parts of your life. So early childhood, youth, defining decade and kind of where you are now. So if we can dig a little into your first choice, which is your colour of your childhood.
So I think when I think of my early childhood and particularly the home in which I lived, the colour scheme that instantly springs to mind was my father's absolute boilerplate favourite colour scheme, which was a very kind of simple beige colour. So I think that really is probably closest to tallow in the Farrow and Ball paint chart. And, you know, he just couldn't get bored of it. And so every house that we've ever moved into has had basically the same look. And generally it's sort of, you know, a magnolia kind of beigey colour, often sort of rag worked walls in the hallway. That was a favourite. And yes, that's my overwhelming sense of coming home and coming into these spaces that were very similar to one another. And that just reminds me so much of home, that, you know, going into the kitchen, creamy beige, cabinetry, creamy beige, walls and my parents' bathroom. I remember going up and having a bath there, which was a real special treat. And that had beige carpet, beige walls, beige bath and sinks and everything else. And there was a carpeted step up to the bath, which I feel like is a real 1980s vintagey trend. I mean, I maybe it should come back. Maybe there aren't enough steps into baths. But that colour for me just brings back those spaces that were so familiar, and that I think maybe familiarity slightly breeds contempt, because I am now a bit negative about beigey, creamy colours.
Could you rebel against all this within your own environment? So your bedroom, were you throwing so many other colours at it just as a sort of the antidote to your father's very fashionable colour drenching? All the trend now.
No, I was not allowed really my own choices. But again, because my father was born in 1925, so he is quite, you know, he's literally old-fashioned. No.
I love the idea of the step down the bath. Is that kind of for good? Is that like Lucy Clayton deportment? Getting out of a bath in an elegant fashion?
Goodness only knows. But I did actually get taught deportment at school. I was again sent to a very old-fashioned school. I was sent to school quite young. I went to boarding school when I was seven. And, you know, things like deportment and cooking were on the curriculum.
How to get out of a sports car with a book on your head.
Those were the things on the curriculum.
It's so bizarre, isn't it?
It is very strange.
And I love your father. Where does this beige come from? Was it just easy? Was it simplicity? Are you coming round to it now? Because we're definitely seeing a return to the love of kind of more gentle, dare I say it, magnolia sort of and creamy neutrals and whites.
I think for him, it was practical reasons. He was in the army. And I think when you are moving from house to house quite frequently, you need your houses to be snapped up quite quickly. And so you want to choose colours that are not going to offend anyone. And I feel like beige is an absolute classic for a reason. It's really inoffensive. It feels homely to a wide variety of people. And that is a very good thing. However, because I had so much of it, it feels a bit of a trap to me. But that is not a reflection on the colour itself. It's just, it's like when you hear a great song on the radio, and then you hear it played again and again and again and again over the course of a summer. And by the end of the summer, you can't imagine why you ever thought that song was great in the first place.
So tallow, just for our listeners. So tallow is obviously the fat that candles are made from, probably from a very, very early point in time, do you think?
Yeah.
You would know. You're the historian. What do you think?
So tallow is quite expensive, actually. That's why one of the reasons why you quite often read novels where they're talking about saving candles. It's because candles were relatively expensive. And tallow is this animal fat that...
Rendered animal fat, isn't it? Yes. Assuming, yeah.
You know, you didn't want to waste it.
Yeah.
So, you know, a precious commodity and the giver of light, both wonderful things.
And it's a very delicate, very forgiving soft white with just a blush of pink yellow through it.
I'm in the process of being converted.
Okay.
It might be a long process, but there we go.
So moving on to your youth. What significant colour kind of takes you to that point in time? What are the memories of this colour and what have you chosen?
For me, when I think of youth, I think of leaving school at the end of each day. This is before I went to boarding school and when I lived in London. And I'd walk home via my mother's flower shop. She was a florist and I used to walk back and sit in the flower shop while, you know, she finished her working day and packed up and all the rest of it. And like a lot of florists, it was kind of on the corner. It was painted black outside. You went in and there was these massive black and white checkered tiles on the floor. And the walls were either very dark green or black. I can't quite remember. It was always quite dim inside. But the shop would just be filled with buckets, you know, ranked up to the ceiling, overflowing with gorgeous, very brightly coloured, highly scented blooms. And the colour that I particularly remember walking in and just seeing so much of was sort of a really gorgeous, saturated, slightly blue-based pink. And so the one that I thought of is Rangwali. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. Yeah. But that's the one that I think of, because for me, that just evokes those beautiful roses that I would see so much of, and peonies and so on and so forth.
Actually, the colour Rangwali is named after the Rangwali Holi Festival, which is
was a Hindu Indian festival, but is now kind of, you know, celebrated across different religions and belief points in India.
But everybody's throwing kind of pigments, aren't they? Dry pigments on. I mean, it is just a celebration of colour, and this is like lovely, slightly blackened, hot pink. So yes, it's kind of hot, but with a little bit of black to sort of knock it back a bit, so without being too luminous. You know, you talk about your mother's flower. Where was it? In London?
Yes, it was on the corner of Chelsea Green.
Okay.
And yeah, I used to walk up the King's Road each evening just before, as she was closing up shop. You know, this was the kind of the 80s and early 90s. So, you know, lots of very gorgeous, over-the-top displays of stonking great pink blooms. That was what she did.
I mean, the whole, as you were saying, sort of these sort of hot pinks, so roses and peonies and probably plenty of other blooms, so yellows, oranges, whites, sort of delphinium blues and all of that. But the smell, I used to work for a florist, so that's why you're kind of taking me on a personal journey. I used to work for Moisey Stevens when they were on Sloane Street.
Oh, fantastic.
And yeah, there's something so beautiful about florists and that activity as well. Did you actually ever get your hands dirty with your mother? Kind of, did she get you doing hand-tied bouquets or?
Yes. So I used to make little posies out of the blooms that maybe weren't quite making it into the official bouquets. I'd make little posies out of them and they would be sold. I remember, you know, that again, it was the 80s. I feel like trends in floristry have moved on, but they had loads of different types of ribbon and wrapping. And so I could sort of select the flowers and then select the different ribbons to go around them. And also in the 80s, there was much more of a trend than I think there is now for using, I think it's called Oasis, and it has a very particular smell. And I have spent, you know, years of my life trying to find a perfume that reminds me of the smell of my mother's flower shop that when I used to go in, which had a lot of this kind of oasis-y smell in it, which is this florist's foam, and then also this heady mixture of flowers, and then also the kind of the wet and the damp that you get in a florist, because obviously they're filling up buckets of water the whole time, and there does seem to be a particular smell that comes with that as well. What a way to send yourself mad trying to recreate a memory. It would be great fun.
It'd be really fun. Would you ever use that? Because you're wearing, if I'm allowed to say this, you're wearing quite strong pink lipstick as well, actually.
I do really like pinks now.
I did spy a pink front door.
Yes, there is a pink front door.
Slightly greyish pink, isn't it? It's really lovely. It's very subtle.
Yeah, sort of, maybe it's Rangwali viewed through a very heavy fog.
Yes, that's quite a nice description. There you go. We rather like that.
And actually, we're in the kitchen of my home at the moment, and there's a cupboard underneath the stairs, which is not my daughter's bedroom, a la Harry Potter, but it is where we've put a little play kitchen for her. And we're going to paint the door of the cupboard pink to match the front door. And we're going to put door numbers on there so that it's like our own front door into our own little play kitchen.
Oh, I love that.
But I really disliked pink up until maybe my late 20s. Again, it was something that I was given a bit too much of when I was a child. I was made to wear a lot of pink. I'm not sure if any other children of the 80s and 90s will remember this, but there were some Marks and Spencer pink and white striped dresses, like with little sailor collars. And I think Dad bought about three of them, and they were pretty much like a sort of a semi-uniform that I wore as a child. And so when I could dress myself and was buying my own clothes, I was not buying pink for quite a long time. But now I've come to see his wisdom, and I've got back into pink. Not sailor collars and maybe not striped dresses from Marks and Spencer, but in other ways, pink is coming back in.
Well, I mean, it is for us, and possibly not Rangwali. I think, as you say, Rangwali is one of those lovely maybe accent colours rather than a full explosion of it. But pink, definitely, in kind of the public consciousness, is very much a colour du jour and has been for sort of 4 years.
I get asked about pink a lot. Pink and black are the colours I get asked about the most.
Well, it's really, I think it's like all colour families, isn't it? So some people will talk about pink in a kind of a generic way, but it's kind of, what pink? Really pale pink, really hot Schiaparelli pink. You know, colour families are huge, aren't they? From the palest nuance to the blackest version of itself, and it's kind of, it's, where does that sit? So I always think that's quite interesting. And you've got all those fleshy pinks. They're definitely having a comeback. I think it's that warm pink that people are loving right now.
You know, Rangwali has got, I feel like, a bit of a blue base, but I think people are really loving the kind of something with a little bit more yellow in it. That's become just sort of almost like an adopted neutral. A pale pink with the yellow base feels very easygoing.
So when you're researching your book, which I loved, I bought at the time, so I haven't, this is not a prop that I got with me, going, I better do this, take my book with me. Did you find anything anecdotally sort of hilarious or wildly interesting about certain pinks?
So I think a fact that I really loved was, I mean, because now we do think of pink as being quite a gendered colour. I think that association is maybe slightly lessening as pink begins to punch more and more above its weight. But I think particularly when I was growing up and, you know, still now, pink is considered kind of the girl's colour. But that was actually not the case really recently, historically, in historic terms. So if you go back to 1900, pink was sort of thought more as a kind of a masculine colour, in effect, because it's pale red, and red was always considered quite martial, you know, very associated with masculinity. I've always really admired pink for its ability to culturally punch above its weight. You know, we don't have a different term for pale yellow or pale green, but we do have a different term for pink, and we think of it as its own kind of colour family, its own category, in a way that we don't for kind of other pale colours, and that's to be admired.
So we're moving on to your defining decade and what colour symbolises that.
So the colour I've chosen is wine dark, and the sort of defining decade, I think, is my 20s. And the reason, I mean, wine dark is a gorgeous colour, but it also makes me think of the sea and a turbulency as well. I think that's there in the name. It does remind me of a stormy sea. And that, for me, does sort of sum up that time in my life. It was a period of really intense highs and lows. I think, like a lot of people my age, or, you know, my immediate contemporaries, I left university and entered the workforce in 2008, just when the financial crash was happening. And I actually heard that I'd got my first ever job at House and Garden on the very day that Lehman Brothers crashed. And I remember getting the email and being like, yay, I've got a job. And then seeing the news reports of people marching out of offices, you know, holding all their belongings, and thinking, I'm not too sure how long this is going to last. I'm not too sure how essential an assistant food and wine editor is to Britain's economy. So I was really happy to have a job, but also immediately feared that I was going to lose it. And actually, I did after a little over a year. But luckily, because I'd seen the writing on the wall, I'd applied to do a master's at university, which I loved. I could barely even get unpaid internships. I was having to send out, you know, letters and letters and emails to get anything. I had, you know, a terrible breakup. So it was quite a frightening time. And then, of course, I got the colour column at Elle Decoration magazine. And then finally, at the very end of the decade, I got the book deal. So yes, a period of real extremes.
I was going to say, it's quite interesting. So for a lot of our guests we've spoken to, that defining decade is often kind of a place where they've kind of really found themselves. And you had all this turmoil, but, you know, actually towards the end of it, it did kind of all fall into place.
Yeah, I think highs and lows is exactly how I describe it. And they were all sort of intermingled. And I think the highs wouldn't have seemed so high and so exciting if I hadn't been through the lows. I think, you know, losing a job and realizing how difficult it was to get another job made getting the jobs when I did get them really exciting. You know, also, you know, realizing how temporary economic circumstances can change and you can get kind of chucked out on your ear. I think, you know, that was part of what gave me the courage to go freelance and to think, okay, I can live outside an organized profession and work for myself. That is something I'm capable of doing. And so, yes, although I say it's turbulent, I don't feel, you know, maybe that sounds too negative. I feel like the turbulence was helpful and character building and really formative.
Tempestuous. Which links us back, yes, to kind of the lovely origins of the term wine dark, which may sound really abstract, but it's a Homeric term for the colour of the sea, which I think was from the Iliad. And we've rather grandly used it to describe this colour. And it's almost a really deep blue with a little bit of violet through it, isn't it? So it's more of an emotive journey rather than a negative connotation of colour for you, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, actually, the colour is gorgeous. It's a really, really beautiful colour. But for me, there's something about that association with the sea and that idea of the sea as being so mutable that really has an association with me for that period, the rough and the smooth.
We are now going to a colour that says where you are now. And having been here and this lovely feeling in your home, there's this very nice sense of calm. Unless that's all a charade.
Well, I do feel like I'm in a really good place at the moment. My third book's just come out and I'm very happy with it. I've also, you know, had my daughter relatively recently, and my sort of memory of her being very little, she was born in the summer and I'd, you know, wake up to give her, to feed her, and there'd be this amazing sort of dawn light creeping into the rooms. And so I do think of this time and particularly those very early months with her as being kind of tinged with the kind of pinky dawn light glow, and that seems to be like a good colour for now. And so I couldn't quite decide whether setting plaster or pink ground was the more appropriate for that kind of dawn light rosy glow. But yes, one of those two feels like a good colour for now.
It's kind of interesting. So that, you know, that blush, you know, that you get in the morning, obviously there's that thing we say, maybe we don't say it anymore, maybe it's just my grandmother, sort of red sky in the morning, shepherd's warning, red sky at night, shepherd's delight. So more of an omen in the morning, but actually that's not to be the case, because I think I've woken up three times at home in Worcestershire in the Midlands this week, and we've had that lovely blush, and there is almost like an apricot burnish to it, isn't there?
Yes.
And when it comes in and everything gets pink, it's actually really rather beautiful, isn't it?
It is. It is funny. I was speaking to a friend of mine who's writing a book about the experiences of people who have kind of professions or things that keep them up overnight. And he actually has one chapter where he's talking to new mothers. And he asked me to sort of jot down some things about that time when I was kind of, you know, sleep dazed and, you know, your body clock has just got into revolt and given up. And when I think about that time, I do have this really strong impression of that gorgeous dawn rosy glow.
It's kind of a fleshy pink, isn't it? So, you know, you were new to motherhood as well, so that sort of lovely sort of baby's bottom sort of softness or sort of podgy jowls of your daughter and everything. It's just kind of all those lovely sort of blush pinky colours.
It's very funny because you do lose all sense of time, and your kind of concept of time and space and, you know, days passing really kind of loosens, and you form these very strong kind of compound memories, because you can't remember any one particular, or at least I can't remember any one particular time or day, but I formed this very strong compound impression of that time, and that compound impression is just absolutely bathed in this particular kind of rosy glow. Although it was slightly ruined by the fact that I hadn't quite managed to finish my book about the Peking to Paris race, which came out in November and is called The Race of the Future. I was trying to desperately to finish it before my daughter was born, didn't quite manage it. And then my publishers got in touch when my daughter was about 6 weeks old and said, do you think you could have the book finished in the next couple of months? And I was sort of like, oh, gamely, like, oh, yeah, you know, she seems to be sleeping all right at the moment. She was 6 weeks old at the time. I think, you know, I'll give it a go. I'll see if I can finish it in the next couple of months. I could not, but I do remember giving it a good go. I'd sort of come down at 4 o'clock in the morning after giving her her morning feed and trying to work on the book for an hour or so before she next woke up. I mean, I wish I could go back in time and see what absolute nonsense I was tapping out at 4 o'clock in the morning after a night feed. It wouldn't have been printable or publishable or anything related to the subject at all. It was probably just sort of strings of F's and G's and D's or whatever it was. But yes, for someone who shied away from pink for so long, those kind of pinks feel like an easing back in, a soft landing pink. They're hopeful.
And we all need some of that.
We definitely all need some of that, yeah.
If we can just kind of dig in a little bit to Secret Lives of Colour, because it just feels totally relevant for here and now. I mean, what's so lovely about this, though, because I still dip into it now, so I kind of read it vociferously when I bought it, and then I dip into it, because then I go, oh, let me have a look at kind of yellow. But there's one chapter that really stood out. One, because it's kind of really macabre anyway, and it's in the Brown family, is a mummy.
Yes.
That is kind of just extraordinary. That's what I loved. I mean, I was chuckling, and some of it bits are kind of gruesome or tragic.
Yes.
But it's kind of like, really?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, browns are really coming back in, particularly those kind of muddy mid-browns. You're seeing them so much more. And so I feel like I'm going to be talking about Mummy Brown a lot more than I ever thought I would be. But it's a really incredible story. Obviously, in ancient Egypt, mummification was the chief burial method. It was used for, you know, many, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of years. And so lots of, you know, there were lots of mummified remains. And, you know, as centuries passed, people began digging these up, sometimes in the hopes of getting treasure, and sometimes for, you know, archaeological interest. And then because there were so many mummies being unearthed, they were then started being used for really ordinary things like fertilizer and even medicine. Shakespeare's son-in-law recommended it to a patient. He was a doctor, and he recommended it to a patient to help cure epilepsy. So you get this association between mummified, you know, powdered mummy and apothecaries, which is where people were buying medical supplies, but it's also where people were buying paint supplies, you know, either for, you know, decorating, you know, homes, or for creating paint for, you know, if you're an artist. And so someone, you know, looked at some powdered mummy, which was this, you know, quite rich mid-brown, and thought, yeah, I think I could paint a great picture with that. And so it became, you know, a really popular artist's pigment, and remained so for a very long time.
That's astonishing. Thank you for reliving that little bit about mummy brown. So this is the point in our program where we gift you a colour, and I really struggled with it. So the main take I took from everything is newness, but this kind of newness and kind of fresh start and everything, and also similar weight to your where you are now colour, the setting plaster. So I want to give you a colour called green ground, cassia green. It's either I either do a really cheesy pun or I plop your name in front of a colour, but it's a really delicate kind of spring renewal, fresh green, almost like a pale pistachio with a little bit more yellow through it.
Fantastic.
So here's your lovely sample pot.
Thank you so much.
Green ground, cassia green. It's a really beautiful, fresh.
I can see exactly why you sort of think about new beginnings when you look at it. It feels like those kind of very early, almost not a colour, almost the impression of a green that you get hazing trees at the very beginning of spring. The imagination, the thought of green, the impression of green that you get at the very beginning of spring, just when you believe that all hope is lost and you'll never see leaves on trees again.
Yes, kind of like as you suggested, your front door is like rangwali through fog. This is like a verdant beach hedge through fog.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
That reduction.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Cassia, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Welcome us into your home, and it's been really lovely hearing your stories. I'm going to do my very best to convert you to magnolia beige at some point in the next couple of years when you're on your decorating quest.
Well, maybe I'll have to tempt you back, lock you in, and just, you know, make you tell me colours that I should paint all my walls, because I'll probably never be able to make a decision myself. So prepare to be held hostage.
If you want to find more out about cassia, she's at Cassia Writes on Instagram. You can also follow us at Far and Ball. Do come and say hello if you've enjoyed the conversation today. My guest next week is the wonderful Keris Matthews. The Cremologist is a Far and Ball and Feast Collective production. The producer is Sarah Cudden. Until the next one, goodbye and hugs.
Paddy, dare I ask you how you would decorate this hallway if this was your hallway?
Well, I suppose it depends what kind of ambience you want, because again, you're like a lot of classic hallways. It's kind of filtered light. You've got a small aperture at the front door. So it depends. Do you want dark and moody, or do you want light and warm and fresh?
I suppose light and welcoming.
Can I put my thinking hat on? Because I don't want to suddenly pull the colour out of the hat just because I'm on the spot.
It's hard being on the spot, isn't it?
I'll email you.
I'll be waiting for that email.